Blog Talk Radio.
Take a licking. There is someone waiting who will hurry up and rescue you. Just call for Super Chicken.
Welcome to the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer Radio Show, brought to you by Tractor Supply, where we give away more chicken coops and chicken-related prizes than anyone else on the planet. We are often imitated, but never duplicated. My name is Andy Schneider, but most know me as the Chicken Whisperer, author of The Chicken Whisperer's Guide to Keeping Chickens, and national spokesperson for the USDA Biosecurity for Birds program. Today is Thursday, August 22nd, and I would like to thank all of you for tuning in this afternoon on Blog Talk Radio. This is a live radio show that is broadcast around the world. This radio show is all about keeping backyard poultry, show poultry, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Each week, we welcome experts in their field to share their knowledge about different topics, including backyard poultry, show poultry, heritage poultry, gardening, cooking, and living a self-sufficient lifestyle. Be sure to follow us on our website, chickenwhisperer.com. It is brand new, brand spanking new. Check it out. Tell us what you think. And you can also, while you're there, at chickenwhisperer.com, follow us on Twitter and become a fan on Facebook. Once again, I would like to thank all of you for tuning in to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer, brought to you by our good friends over at Tractor Supply.
Ware Manufacturing has been building quality hutches since 1983. Ware manufactures modern chicken hutches, barns, pens, and nest boxes designed especially for the backyard flock. Ware offers hutches and pens for every yard size and every chicken keeper's budget. Visit their website at waremfginc.com. That's waremfginc.com. Or call them to find a retailer near you at 1-888-824-7257. Ware Manufacturing.
And you can find all the great Ware products here.
Critter-Cages.com is your one-stop shop for all your critters' housing needs. They stock a wide selection of supplies and equipment for rabbits, guinea pigs, hamsters, mice, rats, ferrets, chinchillas, chickens, and other small critters. Their chicken selection includes chicken barns, chicken coops, and chicken yards from top manufacturers. Your critters will love their selection of quality products, and you'll love their low prices. Visit them online at critter-cages.com. That's critter-cages.com.
Mount Healthy Hatcheries has been a hatching tradition for over 80 years. Home of the healthiest chicks, Mount Healthy Hatcheries offers a wide selection of bantams, turkeys, guineas, ducks, pheasants, and of course, meat birds and layers. Order online at MountHealthy.com, that's MTHealthy.com, or give them a call at 1-800-451-5603. Don't forget to ask about their free bonus chicks offer. Mount Healthy Hatcheries, home of the healthiest chicks.
Established in 1957, GQF has become the name to trust when it comes to quality products and superior customer service. GQF offers a wide range of poultry products, including incubators, brooders, feeders, waters, and much, much more. Give them a call at 912-236-0651 or visit them online at GQFradio.com. That's GQFradio.com.
Hey, it's the Chicken Whisperer, here to tell you that if you have backyard poultry, nothing is more important than making sure your feathered friends are safe from infectious poultry diseases. Learn the simple steps to keep your birds healthy by visiting this website, healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov. That's healthybirds.aphis.usda.gov.
A message from the USDA.
Hi, I'm country music artist Nathan Osmond, and you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer.
And the mighty bird against prejudice continues his fight for law and order. So when you hear that cry in the sky, you'll know it's Super Chicken.
All right, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. It's a great day, boy. Did we ever get some rain yesterday? It was absolutely rain crazy here yesterday. As many of you know, regular listeners of the show, we're about 24 to 26 inches above normal. We're probably approaching 30 inches now, if not over, because yesterday it rained all day. I mean, it was a good, hard, steady rain consistently. We were under a flash flood warning in this part of the North Georgia area. Oh, my goodness gracious. But today it's a little overcast, but the sun is out trying to dry some things up, thank goodness, and hopefully we won't have any rain the rest of the day. Boy, we are just saturated with rain. Yes, more rain. It's incredible. Like I said, I don't think I can ever remember in my 43 years of being on this planet in the state of Georgia we've ever had this much surplus. I just don't know. It's unprecedented. So, but it didn't stop us. We had a good, fun time yesterday with the family. We had karaoke last night, and, man, it was fun. Caleb loves to go up and sing with me, and he gets his own little mic, and he likes to hum along when Daddy sings. I'm trying to think what are the songs I sung, some of the ones I did last night for karaoke. We did Randy Travis, Forever and Ever Amen. I did Randy Travis, Three Wooden Crosses. I did, what was the other ones I did? I can't even remember. I know I did those two for sure. Oh, I did Mel McDaniel, Baby's Got Her Blue Jeans On, gotta love that. And then I did, I did one more. Oh, Alabama, 40-Hour Week. So those were the four that I sang last night at karaoke, and it was we just had a great time. So nonetheless, we were inside having fun, even though the outside it was raining a little bit. So gotta love it. Hope you're having a great day. No show yesterday, I'm sorry to say. I hope you're keeping Arlena Schott in your prayers and thoughts and uplifting vibes, because the way I worded it, she got into a fight with a gas smoker and lost. So I don't know the extent of her burns. I know that she's got a burn on her lip and some other burns as well. And she has gone to the doctor, I know, at least twice for treatment. So please keep her in your prayers and thoughts. So there was it was last minute. Didn't know until before the show. I didn't have time to get a replacement. So sometimes that happens when you're doing live radio every single day. So it's just one of those things. So definitely keep Arlena in your prayers. I asked if she might be feeling up to making that up next Wednesday. Then we'll have her on two Wednesdays in a row. So that's really cool. But, keep her in your prayers, and we give her our best wishes and hope she heals very soon. So we've got a great show lined up for you today. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Great publication, by the way. And today we're talking all about, or he's going to be teaching us all about fodder, growing and raising fodder for livestock, including chickens. So that this was a requested topic. So I shared that with him, and he said, yeah. In fact, it was perfect timing because he was getting ready to send me his four topics for the next four episodes. And so we put fodder at the top of the list. So that is today's show. If you don't know about fodder, or maybe you do and you want to know a little bit about the benefits and growing it, then today is going to be your show. Got to love that. A little bit of chickens in the news before we go to our segment today. I posted this on Facebook yesterday, and I get in America Day, the left and the right. I mean, it's very, very strong, whether you're conservative or liberal or left or right or Republican or Democrat or libertarian or whatever, and I get that. But I don't know if it has a place to play when we talk about chickens. I often tell folks that this radio show is truly fair and balanced, because chickens have both a left wing and a right wing. So we are truly balanced here at the Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer radio show. But yesterday I posted about another salmonella outbreak. This one is different than maybe the one you've heard about the hatcheries up in Ohio. But this one is, this salmonella outbreak currently is linked to New Mexico, a New Mexico poultry hatchery. And I just posted a link. It was a link that came in my email, and it just happened to be from Fox News. And yeah, so somebody like that's like, you know, the information within the article, but somebody put on there, I don't believe anything Fox News says, but I always practice safe handling procedures. Okay, so someone was like, seriously? And then I put, yes, this is factual information there, Rick. As the national spokesperson for the USD Biosecurity for Birds program, I can assure you this is an ongoing outbreak. And then someone else also posted a link from the Department of Health. And so I really don't know what, how could you spin this, whether it be on CNN or Fox News, salmonella outbreak. I mean, how is that left or right? It's pretty crazy. And but anyway, I'm going to read this to you and give you some information about this, and whether you like it or not. It's from Fox News, but it is confirmed. Salmonella outbreak linked to New Mexico poultry hatchery, a national outbreak, and I'm going to just add in there another national outbreak of salmonella has been linked to an eastern New Mexico hatchery that sells live baby chicks, ducks, and other poultry by mail and supplies them to feed stores, state officials announced Monday. The State Department of Health said a strain of salmonella that's infected more than 300 people in 37 states was found in a duck pen at Privet Hatchery in Portales, I guess it's called. No deaths have been reported, but 51 people have been hospitalized, according to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Children ages 10 and under account for nearly three-fifths of those who became ill. People buy baby chicks and other poultry to keep as pets and to raise the birds for eggs or meat. Paul Etstad, state public health veterinarian, said the hatchery was most likely the source of the outbreak. However, he said questions remain because federal officials have found that people sickened with salmonella had purchased baby poultry at 113 feed stored locations that were supplied by 18 different mail order hatcheries in several states. The CDC said more testing is ongoing. Privet Hatchery said in a statement on its website that it's cooperating with state and federal officials and that some of the salmonella cases may be linked to its operation. The department said the hatchery has agreed not to sell any poultry from the pen where the salmonella strain was found, will administer a vaccine to its birds, and include a brochure on safe handling of baby poultry in all of its shipments. According to the CDC, the salmonella cases have occurred across the country from California to New York since March. Colorado has reported the most cases, 37, followed by Texas with 32. Salmonella infections can happen with baby chicks when they're brought to inside a home and children handle them. People should thoroughly wash their hands after touching live poultry or anything in the area where they roam, the department said. And so again, it can be pretty much common sense to, whenever you're done handling these baby chicks, that you need to wash your hands. But hey, folks, that's common sense. It goes whether you just cleaned the litter box of the cat, you just picked up some poo from the dog, you know, you have a lizard and you just changed its water, you have a tarantula, you have goldfish, you have a gerbil, you have a hamster, you just got done cleaning the cage, you just got done playing with it, handling it in your hand, wash your hands. It doesn't matter if it's a baby chick or a chinchilla, okay? So part of that is common sense. Now, I will also share some information with you. The last time I posted about a salmonella outbreak, someone posted on my Facebook page that they did not have to worry about that because they have Marans, and you may pronounce it Marans or Marans, and scientists claimed that their eggshells were much thicker than the average cell, and so that Salmonella can't get in the eggs. It's impossible, so she doesn't have to worry about that whatsoever. Okay? And I've talked to a couple of egg experts, if you will, and it's basically hogwash. That while though a chicken may have a harder shell, and yes, there is a bloom on the outside that will prevent a lot of nasties from leaching in, if you will, that if that hen is contaminated with one of the many different strains of Salmonella, it's in the egg, in the yolk, okay, inside the egg. So no matter how hard the shell is, before the shell is even made and put on around the albumen and the yolk and the white, okay, it's there, no matter how thick the shell is. So we're not talking about necessarily Salmonella being contained in the poop that happens to be maybe on the egg, and you don't wash the egg, and you touch it with your hands, and you touch your mouth, and you get Salmonella that way. We're talking about not properly cooking the egg. Okay, people like the runny yolks, on the toast or what have you, depending on how they cook it, poached or over easy and whatnot. Well, but the Salmonella is inside the egg, so please don't go crazy over these posts that are on the forums and the blogs about the Morans. You don't have to worry about Salmonella because they have a thicker shell. Okay, it's hogwash. So I wanted to share that with you since we're talking about the Salmonella today. This outbreak has been going on for some time now, and they've just talked about the hatchery in New Mexico. They've talked about some in Ohio, and it is nationwide. In fact, this is kind of ironic. This morning when we woke up, I had the radio on, just a little local country station here, not any national station or anything like that, just a little local country station, and they went into their little news feed. On the radio show, I didn't hear it. Jim was like, "Did you hear that?" And I was like, "No, what about?" She said, Salmonella outbreak. They're talking about it in the news. And they said that it was caused by people kissing their chickens. And that was on the little, I guess you call it a little podunk country station here in northeast Georgia about news. And they specifically said that it was many cases were caused by these chicken owners admitting to the investigators that they had cuddled with and actually kissed the chickens, whether it be their kids or the adults or the teens or whoever, kissing their chickens. So, and they where the investigators went, where they had an outbreak of the Salmonella. So, very interesting. Just use your due diligence. Wash those hands. Just like when we do the yearly webinar with USDA, every year we talk about that. There is no place for chickens in a crib, in a stroller, in a bassinet, kissing your chickens, especially, and then, the kids are the worst because they may not, before, even though you're thinking, when we're done petting these animals or handling the chickens, we'll go and get some and wash them and then actually get some of that good antibiotic little hand ointment on them and wash their hands real good. But these are kids. I mean, how fast is that going to happen, But as soon as you grab their hand and start walking to the faucet, boom, their hands are in their mouth, just like that. That's all it takes. So I post about this a lot, just to educate yourselves on the topic of Salmonella, and don't think it's just from poop that's in the coop or in the nest box or in the run, or you wash the egg good and you got the poop off of it, and you wash your hands. The Salmonella may be contained inside the egg in the yolk when you cook it, and you don't cook it right, and then you get Salmonella that way. So it's not just a poop issue and washing your hands issue. It can be contained inside the egg. So regardless of how hard the shell is. So I wanted to share that with you as well. So alrighty, we'll go over to phone lines right now. We've got Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. Let's give him a big chicken. How cool is that? And today we're talking all about fodder. Welcome, Richard. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, okay. Good to be here.
Yeah, so glad you're here, and we're talking about your... In fact, I posted yesterday that you were going to be here today, and someone on our Facebook page, sure enough, a couple of people said, "I love Back Home Magazine," so you've got some fans out there for sure.
Oh, that's great. That's great.
Definitely some subscribers, and there's no reason to not to subscribe. It's a great publication, great information related to your lifestyle that most folks that are listening to the show. And a lot of the information you hear on the show comes directly from issues and back issues and current issues of the magazine. So if you love it when he's on, no reason. Go visit them at the backhomemagazine.com, and you can subscribe right there online, or you can call somebody at the 800 number and talk to somebody if you feel more comfortable doing it that way, and they'll get you all set up. We've given away two or three subscriptions on the radio show, and I think we'll probably be due for one here next time you're on. We may give away another episode, another year-long subscription to your publication. So we've got that going on. But we did have a request, and we get this request every now and then, but we had a very regular listener that said, hey, ask Richard if he'd be willing to help us out and do a show about fodder, interested in doing that on her homestead and farm. And so I mentioned it to you, and you said yes. So here we are talking about fodder today.
Yeah, and that was sort of interesting, because we had about the time that we had that request a couple weeks ago, we had received some additional information from some potential contributors, or a potential contributor, about the exact same topic, basically sprouting fodder for this particular guy was talking more about cattle and larger livestock, but the essentially, and probably what more of what we'll be talking about today is more like sprouting for poultry, because it's just a much more home scale, small scale operation. But the technique and the theory and the process is all basically the same, no matter what grain you're sprouting, and no matter what animal is eventually going to be feeding off of that grain. So, yeah, it was real fortuitous, and actually we have not done an article on it yet, but we are working on just doing some research now, talking to a few different people, looking at some systems, looking at not only purchasable systems and commercial-type systems, but also looking at some homemade alternatives to doing a very small-scale sprouting operation. And so I'm just piecing together bits of information from what we're currently researching and listening to people who are doing it and looking into different scales, you know, large and small and medium-sized scales. So we'll just have a little chat today about just what sprouting is all about.
Awesome.
And you know, it's I just hadn't put two and two together relating the poultry with the cattle, but essentially, it's ideal for a small poultry operation, or you know, backyard poultry, or a small, you know, a small operation. If somebody's in the commercial, even in the commercial poultry business, or in the egg business, or anything, it's just a really healthy alternative to a lot of commercially purchased chicken feeds. That if people feel uncomfortable about where their feed is coming from, whether the you know, economic crunching is forcing them to buy questionable feed, or buy some substandard, or maybe off brands that maybe they don't sometimes wonder where this is coming from, what's the quality of it, is there mold issues, ingredients that aren't particularly there. I mean, we've had letters or comments from people on Facebook or whatever, just the comments about like arsenic in the feed, traces of heavy metal or arsenics or toxins in some of the lesser quality commercial feeds, and you know, to what extent mm-hmm. do we want those in our backyard chicken feed or any other feed? So the idea of supplementing your own free range feeding that they may get from free ranging is by doing a sprouting system or sprouting operation is just an ideal blend of, you know, common sense and saving money and sort of getting involved, proactively involved with producing your own feed products, so we can feel a little more comfortable about what your birds are eating, or your cattle, or your, you know, anything else that you might be raising. So I sort of wanted to clarify that right up front, that this, you know, mm-hmm. this type of fodder system is operable for any, you know, many different kinds of livestock, but you know, you've got to realize that the, you know, the system that you might set up to do, you know, 40 head of cattle is going to be a lot larger and more complicated and more expensive than the system you might set up at your home to feed, you know, four or six chickens. But I sort of like the small scale stuff better because it's easier to understand and talk about. Essentially, we've done some of these. The sprouting is essentially a variation of a hydroponic gardening technique. And as some of you may listeners may or may not know, hydroponics is just the sort of the growing of produce in a non-soil situation, where instead of having a earth an earth soil-based situation, hydroponics lets people grow in a substrate or in sort of a it's basically just a collection of something to basically to hold the roots, and it's a watering and flushing system. The plants, whatever they are, it could be lettuce, it could be just about anything, sprouts, lettuce, any leafy greens, tomatoes. There's a lot of hydroponically raised produce, and these are planted in a substrate. Several different materials are used, but they're just planted in something to keep the roots in place. And some of these are greenhouse based, some of artificial lighting, but the watering systems are on a schedule, and the nutrients are flooded through the roots of the plants and flushed out and then recycled. And initially, a lot of the much of it is a chemical based formula that provides the nutrients through a balance of the correct nutrients they need. In a chemical sense, but there are definitely some organic-based hydroponic systems as well, which require a little more attention and just more attention to detail and more understanding of what what's going on there. But hydroponic systems are just a really efficient way of growing in a more controlled environment than they would be out in the in the raised bed garden or out in the field somewhere, and a lot of commercial growers of tomatoes and lettuce and such have gone to hydroponics to be able to control their crop to where they can really count on what they're going to get at the end of the season without having to worry about humidity, weather, water, insects. Not that it eliminates insects completely, but within the controlled environment, they have a lot more control over their harvest times and their actual volumes of harvest. So sprouting is really just a variant of sort of a hydroponic technique in which you're sprouting grains, and a variety of grains. It could be wheat grains, wheat berries. It could be barley. It could be just any kind of grain, any kind of edible grain, and you're basically just allowing these grains to sprout in a moist environment and grow. And then when they grow to a certain point, harvesting them and feeding them to your livestock, and this in its simplest form is just really growing sprouts like we'd eat like we eat bean sprouts. A lot of people you can buy them at the health food store, or the co-op, whatever, grocery store, but a lot of people actually sprout their own in a sprouting cabinet. They sprout their own bean sprouts and harvest them on a regular basis and add them to their salads or sandwiches or whatever however they eat them, and it's a very natural, nutritious and fresh way of adding protein and other nutrients to your diet, and it's really not a big deal. It doesn't require a lot of equipment. If you're doing a small operation, it doesn't. If you're doing a larger one, there are any number of commercial systems set up for professionals that allow you to really invest in sprouting and fodder equipment and feed. I mean, I've seen case studies here feeding 200-300 head of cattle with these larger operations, but we're not really going to talk about that so much here because it's sort of beyond our element. But it's a very interesting It is more labor intensive. It's a lot easier to just go down to the feed store and get a 50 pound bag of 17% pellets and just do it that way. But this makes it more interesting. You're participating a little more in your poultry's diet, and like most people do, or many people do, if you're free ranging your birds anyway, they get some diet supplement from that, and then you're reducing your purchase feed. And if you do the sprouting, you're adding to the unpurchased. Well, you do have to. Most people do buy their grains from some supplier anyway, but it's a lot cheaper to sprout them than it is to buy a ground up corn or pellets. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, most people feed their chickens from their kitchen scraps as well. So between those three things, the sprouting, the foraging, and the kitchen scraps, you pretty much take care of your bird's needs. And of course, in the winter, you may want to supplement a little more with feed, but it's not absolutely necessary. So I wasn't really sure, if anybody had any comments already in the chat room about that, or any direction anybody wanted to take particularly, but essentially the whole process involves just getting some equipment together. It can be something as simple as mason jars, just the quart jars. Mm-hmm. Some people actually have sprouting trays. You can put the grains in a sprouting tray. Or even sprouting cabinets, if they have gone that far, if they already have some experience with sprouting and want to do it that way. But essentially, it's just a matter of, the simplest thing is to just get your grains whether you get them from a natural foods distributor or a co-op or a mail order or wherever you might get them, and whether they be wheat or barley or any other kind of, there's a number, rye or any other type of grain you might want to be feeding. It's a matter of just soaking, getting the grain is actually a seed. Each particular piece is a seed, and it's eventually going to sprout with small leaves and roots, just like any other seed. Essentially, what you're doing is soaking your grains or your seed mix into water for about 6 hours or more, maybe 6 to 8 hours, and you have to get them moisturized and soaked. And the other thing is that it's maybe not critical, but it's probably important to try to use water that's not chlorinated. And for those who aren't real familiar with that, most city water systems, municipal systems, mm-hmm. that are you pay for are going to be chlorinated. I mean, that's the way they protect from bacteria and coliform and all the trace elements that get in there that of a bacterial nature that can make people ill if they're not used to it. Over years, like people on wells, they get used to their own water, and your body builds up its own defenses against any kind of normal, minor bacterial presence. But in city water, they have standards to maintain, I guess, and whatever. So they naturally or unnaturally chlorinate it. And so the chlorination is there really to kill bacteria. So you really don't want to use chlorinated water in your seed sprouting activities, because that would be sort of cross purposes. You don't want to discourage the growth of the seeds. You want to encourage them. So if you're on well water or a water source that is not a city source or is not chlorinated, and you can pretty much just tell by that chlorinated odor and taste that comes through the tap, if you're on well water or a non-municipal system, you're pretty much covered because you don't have to worry about it. But the chlorinated water from the city or village tap or municipal system is going to have to be dechlorinated, and the best way to do that is just get some tubs or pots and pans or containers of some type, stainless steel, food grade plastic, couple of quart pots, really anything except for maybe galvanized. Glass would be fine, like a big glass bowl. I probably have to have several of them because you need to have a volume of water to work with. But just leaving, just drawing the water out of the tap and putting it in the containers and just leaving them to sit for a while to just let the, what happens is the chlorine turns to, or the chlorination turns to chlorine gas and just exits out the water over a period of time. So basically just keeping them in an open container, the chlorine will transform into a gas and float and just dissipate into the atmosphere over time. Now that may be a matter of 12 hours. It could be a matter of a day, like 24 hours. In some cases, you know, if you really want to get everything out, it could be a matter of like 48 hours. That's a little unusual. So anywhere from 12 to 24 hours or overnight is really just a good enough to remove most of the chlorine. You're never going to get every bit of it out, and it's really not that all that necessary. But you know, really for sensitive things like aquariums or such, it may be a two day affair. Just let all the water just get rid of its chlorine gas out mm-hmm. there over a period of 48 hours. But you know, 12 to 24 should be adequate for, you know, what we're talking about. So it's just a matter of open container, maybe a cheesecloth over the top if you want to keep out any other contaminants or, you know, prevent things from dropping in there or any other issues. You can do that, but it has to be a fiber or fabric that allows evaporation to occur. So it has to be porous. And it's absolutely necessary to cover it up, but, you know, just if you're going to let it sit there for 24 hours, it might be a good idea. Just put a little cheesecloth or some, you know, old T-shirt or something over there to just let it cover the top of it. But essentially, you're soaking the sprouts in a container, and it could be anything really, a jar or a bowl or whatever, and let that happen for about 6 to 8 hours, and then you want to drain all the water out of the sprouts or out of the seeds, you don't have an excess of water. You want them moist, but you don't want them like still soaking in water. You can lay them into, say, shallow trays. Now the trays will have to be sprouting type trays. They have to have holes in the bottom of them. They do make sprouting trays specifically for the purpose. You can buy other types of cooking related trays. I've seen things even for barbecue cooking that have, you know, just some kind of drain. They're perforated, so they have drain holes in them. Or you can just take a baking pan type of thing, like either the big, just a regular baking pan, or some of the bigger, I don't know what the size would be, like 18 by 24 or something like that, or even they don't have to be quite that big. But if you just take a drill and drill, say, eighth inch holes through the bottom of the, or 1/16th inch or eighth inch holes through the bottom of the tray, just enough to get the water out. You can do that. Spend a few minutes drilling holes, and you'll have your tray. But no matter what the size, just pour the moist grains into the tray, and just basically you'll have to have a situation where you can water the seeds that are out in the tray, but they have to be able to, you have to have some place for the drained water to go. I mean, you wouldn't want to put it on your kitchen table and do it there. Some people set it up on windowsill. Some people have can do it over the sink or over the part of the sink that you're not using. Sometimes you could make a little utility sink or a little place where the water can drain off into a sink with the trays placed over a drainage basin or a drainage tray, so the water can drain down into a sink or something. But what will happen is you'll need to be watering the grains a couple of times a day to keep them moist, but they also have to be drained. And the reason is that that you don't want moisture to stay on the seeds, because you don't want a mold situation, because it can happen easily, and especially in a warmer environment, for the mold to develop on the seeds, and that's obviously something you do not want to happen for poultry or anything else. So if you rinse them and drain them a couple times a day is going to prevent the mold from occurring. The temperature levels, you're looking at about 60 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit. The lower the temperature, you know, under 65, it's going to help reduce the mold possibilities. And really just a matter of how many days you want, how far along you want those seeds to sprout. Everything's a little bit different, but essentially the fodder is going to be a better product for feed and in the later stages of its growth. So some people, in some situations, you can sprout for maybe it might take about 3 days or so. In some situations, it could be 5 or 6 or maybe even a little more before the green sprouts start to occur, and then you can just harvest at the particular stage of growth that you want to. Just harvest the whole tray and just feed it to the animal like that. And the main important thing to recognize is not to allow any mold to occur on that. And you can just, when you're learning, when you're first starting out, you want to just keep an eye on it to make sure that you don't see any black spores or black mold form. And the way to do that is to keep the rinsing going on and make sure the moisture drains off and whatever it takes a couple times a day to get that to happen, that's what you do. They'll actually, as I said, they'll grow from a dry seed into a plant, which could be like barley, for example, could be grown to maybe 6-inch growth in maybe 6 days. Another way of doing this is actually doing it within the mason jars, and for a small scale feeding experiment or whatever, you just do as I just told you, but actually let all that happen within the mason jars on the windowsill. And you can rinse them, you know, you just, if you, when you need to rinse them, you can pour the water into the jar and just rinse it out. You could poke holes in the top of the lid and just rinse them out through the vented lid that way, and the sprouts will actually grow right within the jar. Like wheatberry, for example, will grow right within the jar on a windowsill, and just start greening up, you know, within a couple of days, and it's it works out real well to do it that way, because it's a small space, it's good for a starter experiment, and you know, it just works out real well. And I would just suggest again dechlorinating the water and making sure you drain and rinse the wheat berries at least once a day, maybe twice a day if you're worried about contamination from mold. And and you really need to only, you don't need to fill the jars right to the top. You don't want to fill them right to the top, because they will expand and they will have to have room to grow. So you can essentially just fill them up about a third, fill a quart jar up about one third full of wheat berries, for example, and then let them soak. As I said, let them soak anywhere from, it depends on the grains, but the wheat may want to soak a little longer, maybe 8 to 12 hours, maybe overnight, something like that, if that's how you want to do it. And then drain the water out and put them on the windowsill and just let them start and rinse them out once a day, twice a day, and just continue that for 5-6 days, whatever, 6-7 days, maybe whatever you want, whatever it takes to get them to sprout their greens to a point where it's worth, you know, feeding to the chickens. And you know, it's really on a small scale. That's just really about it. I mean, there's no need to get more complicated. If you've got a small flock, or you just want to make a small experiment to see how it goes, where how much trouble it is, when you do it in the jars, it's a little more labor intensive, because you have to have to cap them or figure some way. I guess you could put a strainer over, that would be easy too, just put a strainer over the mouth of the jar and then tip them upside down after you've rinsed them or after you've filled them to let the water come out, and then just let them sit back, get back upright to let the grains do their growing on the windowsill or any other place you happen to be doing it. There has to be sun to them to get the green to start happening, obviously. And as far as feeding goes, you can just basically just mix it with your regular. If you want to continue to feed regular feed, that's doable. If you want to feed with kitchen scraps, obviously not putting in meat or fats or anything, but just with your greens, your green kitchen scraps that you would normally feed safely to the birds, you just mix in your sprouts, and it really can supplement quite substantially the feeding schedule and cut down on your feed bill. And it works. It's sort of a nice active way of getting involved with your animals.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, a lot of, like you said, you don't have to have 10 acres to be able to do this. If you've got your backyard block or a homestead, you'd have to, we don't want people to think that.
Yeah, that's I don't know enough about at this point because we are researching. We're in the process of doing an article on it. But at this point, I don't really know enough about the larger commercial operations to really speak in detail about them. But it's just a very doable, even on a larger scale, a very doable process with the correct, with the right investment. And I've been looking at a couple of commercial level suppliers and just getting some cost benefit, cost to return benefit figures on these things. And it's on a larger scale. It's a little more serious because people are making big investments in equipment and that. And is it really going to return? Is it going to make as much feed? Is it going to be as healthy as full of the correct nutrients? But what I'm seeing, at least in my earliest research, is that especially in times like this, in times when either excess rain or in some areas of the country drought is causing such a situation with the availability of regular, the availability and cost of regular feeds for, say, cattle, people who have the ability to grow their own sprouted fodder right on site, or even right in the community. Maybe in some situations, people can think about a community-based fodder operation where a number of people get together and can feed off pull off the same feed operation. It makes a lot of sense to have a locally accessible source of both healthy and just readily available stuff, food. For the livestock, right local, so you don't have to worry about, gee, do I have to drive to the next state to be able to get some fodder for my, some feed for my cattle? And a situation like this, if you're invested in the site operation, you've got it, right there. Fodder is a lot more, there's a lot more moisture in it than there is in regular feed, because just the nature of the beast. I mean, the seed is moist and the green is moist, and so your fodder may only have a smaller percentage of it. Of sprouted fodder is going to be considered dry, probably somewhere between 10% and 15%. But it certainly is probably more enjoyable for, say, a chicken or guinea fowl or anything else to be eating something that's a little more palatable. And green and soft, I would think. I mean, when I give my chickens lettuce and whatever I have in the way of kitchen scraps is still fresh and everything, they just love it. I mean, it's so much different than the regular old pellets that you pour in there. And it's like, that's there. I know that's always there. But the greens are just something special for them.
There's a question in the chat room. We kind of touched on this. Is there any particular grain better than another as far as nutrition to sprout for their chickens?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the chicken feed is wheat, wheat and then the wheat family, and there's different kinds of wheats. I mean, there's the winter wheat and the red wheats and the harder wheats and whatever. But but anything in the wheat family is definitely a good potential. Barley is another one. and I don't know, you know, I'm not real familiar. There's a lot of bread baking grains out there, but you know, you also have to look at the cost of, if you, most people are going to have to be still buying the grains from a source of some type. So some grains are more costly than others because they're really there to supplement the bread makers. And you know, just like anything else, like beer brewing or anything else, you're going to get specialty areas that in which the grains aren't as readily available, so they come at a higher cost. But just, you know, just regular old wheat berries is really, you know, a low cost or economy level grain to be using. And the other thing too, the difference is going to be the difference between an organic product, for example. You know, if you want to be really really go organic with it, they're going to be a lot more, or I mean a lot more. They're going to be more costly than just a regular product. And the other thing is there's a difference between the human consumption food grade and the livestock grade that's available. I'm trying to think of the name. There's actually a I think it's basically called feed level or feed quality grains. They're not the kind, not essentially for human consumption. They're basically for livestock, and they may include, you know, they're not necessarily purified to the level of what we would eat. You know, they may be mixed in with stuff that isn't, you know, it may overflow from the processing, or you know, they weren't necessarily kept in food grade containers or whatever. So the feed grade quality for the livestock is going to be considerably cheaper than a human grade that you'd buy for making bread. So that's another thing to be aware of. You don't need that human consumption level stuff. In case anybody was going to go to the co-op or so and try to price some of this out, they might be shocked because what they're going to buy there is essentially a human grade product. But for experimentation, you know, just want to try it out maybe a couple times, see how the grain making goes. It wouldn't be that much of a cost issue, and at which case, if you like the whole thing, then you could locate a source of grains from a feed and seed store or from an online source that might be able to supply you with a feed grade product, as opposed to a human food grade product that would be considerably cheaper. Are you there, Andy? I may be off. A little technical difficulty here. As I said, the rinsing is very important because.
I'm sorry,
I was
on mute, and I just went through a complete question for you and comment, and nobody even heard it.
Oh, gee.
I pulled a Pat Foreman. I was just yapping away, and nothing ever happened. So hang on just a second. So Lee in the chat room, or Lee or Leah, said, so if I'm researching this, basically, if it's good for me, it'd be good for them. But I think you just kind of answered that as well, being that you could go to Whole Foods and buy a 25 or 50-pound bag of, say, red wheat berries or something, and it may be quite pricey versus going to a local animal feed mill, co-op, or a feed and seed looking for a 50-pound bag of winter wheat, winter, you know, something like that you're going to plant maybe in a pasture. And it is much less than what you would buy, say, Whole Foods for us, but they're still getting that nutrition. We didn't really haven't touched on yet, I guess, if somebody wants non-GMO, then obviously, just like with anything, or organic, you're going to pay for that. But I think that was good that you made sure that we knew that there's, you know, there was still a difference between, say, livestock grade that you find at the feed store for doing this, growing the fodder, or growing something you may grow for you, for your smoothies. You know, you want a wheatgrass smoothie, that might be a bit more expensive.
Exactly. It just basically looks at the livestock grade or the feed grade, and that's going to do it. But, you know, I don't know if it was, I'll just repeat it. You know, basically, if you're just experimenting, it would be, it wouldn't break bust a bank just to go down to the co-op or whatever and get some human grade mm-hmm. stuff and just, you know, put out a couple of jars and see how it goes, see how much work it is, how much you get out of it, and then if it works for you, you could then go online or to your feed store and see about mm-hmm. availability of livestock grade.
Yes, that makes perfect sense to me. Absolutely. Cool.
Yeah.
Let me take a break here, and then we'll come back, and we can add anything else to what we've already talked about the first half of the show. Folks, you're listening to Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today is Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine. And we're talking, due to popular demand, talking all about fodder. And so if you tuned in late or tuned in halfway through the guest episode, guest segment, then all of our shows are archived on iTunes.com, Podcast.com, Zoom.com, and many other places where podcasts are carried. It is completely free to listen on iTunes. So if you missed it, and or even go to Blog Talk Radio, normally within about 10 minutes after the show is over, it is archived for your listening pleasure 24/7 if you happen to miss some of this. And so we thank you for listening, and there'll be a lot more when we come back after this short break. So stay with us.
When you need an incubator, think Brensey, the incubation specialist. Brensey has been a world-leading manufacturer of incubators for over 30 years. Incubators from 7 to 380 eggs with high-quality electronic and digital controls, including precise humidity control and programmable egg turning, all at surprisingly affordable prices. Visit them online at Brensey.com. Brensey spelled B-R-I-N-S-E-A. That's Brensey.com or call 1-888-667-7009. Enter the coupon code WHISPER at checkout and save 10% on their incubators, brooders, egg candlers, and other incubation accessories. When you need an incubator, think Brensey, technology you can trust.
Pictures of chickens on aprons are common across America, but picture a chicken wearing an apron and you'll probably get a good chuckle. Laugh if you must, but nothing protects hens better than the Hen Saver Hen Apron. Hen Saver Hen Aprons protect your hens from the damage caused by an overly affectionate rooster and may even provide protection from an unexpected hawk attack. Hen Savers come in several different sizes to fit both bantam and standard-sized hens and roosters. Colors include camo, denim, navy, brown, khaki or black, and soon pink. Crazy K Farm is expanding its already colorful Hen Saver collection to include the color pink. A portion of their sales will be donated to organizations that fund breast cancer research and awareness. Order your Hen Saver aprons today at hensaver.com. That's hensaver.com.
Ideal Poultry has been a family-owned and operated business since 1937. Their business is built on customer service and quality poultry. From rare white and brown egg layers to broilers, ducks, turkeys, and bantams, Ideal Poultry is the largest supplier of backyard poultry in the United States, shipping close to 5 million chicks annually. Visit them online at idealpoultry.com. That's idealpoultry.com. Introducing the Chicken Fountain, a new way to water your flock. The Chicken Fountain will change your life and keep your chickens healthier by providing clean, fresh water every time. No more daily cleaning of dirty chicken waterers. This semi-sealed system keeps every drop of water fresh and clean. Proudly made in the USA, the Chicken Fountain will provide your flock with fresh, clean water for years to come. To order your Chicken Fountain, visit chickenfountain.com. That's chickenfountain.com.
McMurray Hatchery is the world's oldest and largest rare breed hatchery. They have been providing their customers quality poultry since 1917 and have more than 110 different breeds to choose from. Be sure to sign up for their weekly special email at McMurrayHatchery.com and receive a $5 internet exclusive coupon to use on your first internet order. McMurray Hatchery, the world's largest
and oldest rare breed hatchery.
How would you like a punch in the beak?
Actually, in reality, I am Super Chicken.
This looks like a job for Super Chicken.
Alrighty, thank you very much for staying with us today on Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. Our guest today, Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, and he comes on the second and fourth Thursday of every single month, and we occasionally, about once a month, give away a one-year subscription to his great publication, Back Home Magazine, but no need to wait for that. You can go ahead and visit backhomemagazine.com, and you can order right on their website or give them a call and talk to a real human right here in the good old USA in North Carolina. So take advantage of that. And a lot of our shows here, in fact, I guess most of them, come from either past magazines, past issues, or even current issues that they've got running right now. So mailed right to your front door. So take advantage of that. And we're talking about fodder today, and lots of information has been covered so far, that's for sure. A lot of explanation and some issues that might, if you were thinking about it and a little scared, Richard has a good way of whatever our topics are, making things a little bit more down to earth, seem a little bit more simple, kind of like, hey, you can do this type of atmosphere. So, Richard, thank you for definitely doing that, and I'll hand it right back over to you.
Yeah. One of the people in the chat room had asked about different varieties of wheat or what other types of seeds would be good. And I think it's probably worth it for me to mention that, as you may have said, you know, that there are several types of wheat, a couple different kinds of wheat, and so they grow at different rates. Spring wheat's going to be a softer, faster growing, for example, and the red wheat that you mentioned is a little harder, and it takes a little longer to germinate. And what I didn't mention is that in the early day or so of the process, a direct sunlight on the windowsill may be a little too strong for the seeds. So basically, just a place back away from the window. Maybe light or even maybe not so light, but just a place that's not in direct sunlight might be a better alternative for certain types of seeds, to just give them a warm, or like I said, about a 70-degree environment, 65-70-degree environment, to start their germination, but out of direct sunlight, which may be a little too drying and too potent for them. So a few days on a shelf or a cabinet away from the windowsill, and then when they have built up a little bit after a day or so, then you can move them out into the sun, and that's a sort of a important point for certain types of seeds which may be a little more delicate. And
how
the other
about
thing,
grow lights?
Well, that's all. I have not really gotten into that, because that's all sort of part of the when I say haven't gotten into it, we haven't really learned much about that, is because that was sort of a commercial level operation that I didn't really consider, like adding the expense of the lights and everything. But I'm pretty sure that using artificial lighting would be very doable in a situation where you may not have access to sunlight. But just, I guess the way I'm thinking is why spend money on electricity and that kind of thing if you just use the sun. But if somebody had a basement operation, a situation where the only place they really had available to do this would be in a basement or a room that maybe doesn't have access to sunlight, then sure, I can't see why that wouldn't work. And that's really getting much more directly into the hydroponic systems I'm talking about. They have hydroponic systems in greenhouses, but they also have hydroponic systems that are totally and completely in closed rooms with totally artificial lighting, watering, ventilation, everything. So yeah, absolutely. There are mail order places, and we have a store right here, two of them actually, right here nearby, within 20 miles of where I am right now, that sell everything you'd need to have to do full-blown hydroponic operation with and without lighting. So it's not that difficult to get the equipment. But one thing I did want to mention before we end the discussion is that the why are beyond just the fact of giving your livestock a little different kind of feed or supplementing feed or even emergency feeding, like if we really can't get access to feed, I can at least make do with doing it myself here. You know, you can store, you can buy your dry seeds and store them in a airtight environment, a barrel or a bucket or whatever. And you know, this is a great way to carry through in a situation where you may have, you may not be able to get feed. I mean, there have been times that I maybe needed feed and didn't really want to have to go into the feed store, or who knows? I mean, it could be like a situation where there's weather in the winter, weather you can't get out, or possibly just a shortage of grain. I mean, I imagine it could happen. Just for grains going elsewhere and not as much going to the feed store, and people say we're just out of that 17% or we're out of the 22% high protein feed, or I can only sell you a 10-pound bag, not a 50-pound bag, because we're short for whatever reason. The drought. Transportation issues, whatever. It wouldn't hurt to have a supply of seed readily available for sproutability, just in the back of the closet somewhere, or the back of the pantry, just in case, and you have a little get through a few days of feeding that way. But beyond all that, fodder itself is probably as close to a natural feed as you can come. I mean, it's a green, it's a growing, living food source, and it is very close to what most livestock are built to digest, and that's what they normally eat, and their digestive systems are made to eat food in the form of just the way the sprout is. I mean, it's a seed with a leaf on it, and it's much easier for them to digest that than it is to digest a pellet, for example, that they have to actually process within their system. So it's you don't have to go through the steps, or they don't have to go through the steps of processing to make it digestible. It's already digestible. It's like an egg. It's already one of the most digestible forms of food there is, and being able to feed your livestock a natural feed that's already pre-processed in the way that they're really designed to eat it is a great benefit. And as I said, a lot of people, would be supplementing their sprouted grain with their regular feed, with their kitchen scraps, and with their foraging, the chicken's foraging activities makes an excellent balanced diet for them, and a lot less expensive than buying a 50-pound bag at the feed store every week or whatever your schedule might be.
Yeah, that's cool. That's awesome. Awesome information. A lot of people are interested in this. They're not really sure where to get started, how to get started, if they have to own 10 acres or 1 acre, or just a portion of their homestead, or even inside, like we talked about, getting it started. So, you explained a lot of information, especially for the beginner, which is great. And you'll have to remind us when an article comes out and an upcoming issue about once it's done, so people can hopefully subscribe for the year, or they can either go and try to find that one issue at a Tractor Supply or the local BBC, the local bookseller, and pick that up if it truly interests them. And we know it does, because we've heard a lot of people specifically even recently, and that's why we wanted to do the show. So we gotta love it. And thank you so much for coming on and explaining this, and a great topic. And I know we've got the next 3 topics after this one all set, so we're looking forward to that. So, folks, the second and fourth Thursday every single month, Richard Friedenberger, we're so glad to have him on. Comes on, talks about different aspects of homesteading. We've had episodes about cast iron cooking, best woods for the wood stove, preserving apples using old-timey techniques, you name it. So, great topics. These are the same things you'll find in this publication. Again, it's backhomemagazine.com. Richard, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate another great topic here, and we look forward to seeing you in a couple of weeks, and we wish you all the best.
Yeah, and we'll like you said, we'll let people know, let folks know, probably on our Facebook page is a great way to do it, just when we're going to run the fodder article. It may well be, you know, November, December, the coming issue. So, you know, we just sort of get the word out and you know, we appreciate it, sharing all this information with folks, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
That sounds great. Thank you very much for joining us, folks. That's Richard Frudenberger, publisher of Back Home Magazine, backhomemagazine.com. And I think the next time we'll be on, we just might give away a year subscription to his great publication. But if you can't wait that long, backhomemagazine.com. And actually, they are the original Mother Earth News staff that he has right now, back from way back when. And so kind of broke off from Mother Earth News and doing their own thing now and have for 22 years, I guess. Backhomemagazine.com. Well, that's going to end up and wrap up another great episode of Backyard Poultry with the Chicken Whisperer. And I just feel kind of compelled to, oh, I don't know, maybe to play this. You pulled my leg. One more. Very much for tuning in today. So glad. Hey, we'll have a great weekend. We'll see you back here this coming Monday. We've got Peter Brown, also known as the Chicken Doctor. Talked to him on the phone this morning, and he promises to have a great topic this coming Monday, and we'll be taking calls and answering your questions. Over the weekend, we'll start posting on our Facebook page questions for the Chicken Doctor. Post them here. So Monday, we'll have a shorter topic of discussion on a chicken topic, of course, and then we'll be answering your phone calls and your texts and your post on our Facebook and Twitter pages. That's this Monday, Ask the Chicken Doctor with Peter Brown. Hope you all have an absolutely wonderful and blessed weekend. God bless everybody. Have a great one. Oh.